But what about all the other times? I ask. He shrugs. We don't know she was involved with those. All we know is what you saw this morning. I grip my mug. The coffee is already cold, but I drink it anyway. So everything we gave you is useless. Nothing is useless when someone goes missing, Officer Rodriguez says. All I'm saying is that it's premature to draw conclusions based on what you've shared. That's my job, okay? Not yours. He leans forward and raps his knuckles on the table for emphasis. Listen up. I appreciate you guys coming to me. I really do. But you need to stay out of this from now on. Not only for your safety, but because if you are circling around someone who played a role in Brooke's disappearance, you don't want to tip them off, okay? We both nod, and he crosses his arms. I'm going to need a verbal confirmation.
You're better at this than I thought, Ellery says under her breath.
Officer Rodriguez frowns. What? She raises her voice.
I said okay.
He juts his chin toward me, and I nod.
Yeah, all right.
And please keep this between us. Officer Rodriguez levels his gaze at Ellery. I know you're close to your brother, but I'd prefer you not share what we've discussed outside this room. I doubt she's planning to honor that request, but she nods.
Okay.
Officer Rodriguez glances at the clock on his microwave. It's almost 6:30. Does your grandmother know you're here?
No, Ellery says. She doesn't know anything.
Officer Rodriguez's eyes flick toward me at the emphasis, and I keep my face carefully blank. It's a little surprising, maybe, that nobody in Echo Ridge made the connection between his father and the twins before now. But Mr. Rodriguez was one of those private family guys that nobody saw much of. Even when you did, he didn't resemble the photo Ellery showed me on her phone. He'd been wearing thick glasses as long as I could remember, and had gotten a lot heavier and balder. Ezra better enjoy his hair while he can.
You should get home, then. She'll worry if she wakes up and you're not there. You too, Malcolm.
Okay, Ellery says, but she doesn't move.
She jiggles her foot again and adds,
I was wondering something about you and Lacey.
Officer Rodriguez cocks his head.
What about me and Lacey?
I asked you once if you were friends, and you wouldn't answer me.
I wouldn't?
His mouth twists in a wry smile.
Probably because it's none of your business.
Did you... She pauses. Did you ever want to, you know, ask her out or anything?
He huffs out a small laugh.
Sure. Me and most of the guys in our class.
Lacey was beautiful, but she wasn't just that. She cared about people. Even if you were nobody at school, she made you feel like you mattered. His expression darkens. It still tears me up what happened to her. I think that's half the reason I became a cop.
Ellery's eyes search his, and whatever she sees there relaxes the tense set of her shoulders. Are you still looking into her murder?
Officer Rodriguez shoots her an amused glance as his phone buzzes.
Give it a rest, Ellery,
and go home. He glances at the screen, and all the color drains from his face. He pushes his chair back with a loud scrape and gets to his feet.
What?
Ellery and I ask at the same time. He reaches for a set of keys on the counter.
Go home,
he says again, but this time, not like it's a joke.
And stay there.
Chapter 30. Ellery. Monday, October 7th. I'm sitting on Nana's front steps, phone in hand. Malcolm left a few minutes ago, and Officer Rodriguez is long gone. Or maybe I should start calling him Ryan. I don't know the protocol for addressing probable half-brothers who, until recently, were on your short list of cold case murder suspects. Anyway, I'm alone. Something's obviously going on with Ryan, but I have no idea what. All I know is that I'm sick to death of watching lies pile up on top of one another like the world's worst Jenga game. I pull up the photo I snapped of Mr. Rodriguez's army picture, studying the familiar lines of his face. When Ezra noticed the August 2001 date on my timeline, I was afraid that maybe, we were dealing with a potential Vance Puckett paternity situation. I never imagined this. I can't call Sadie. I don't know whose phone she's been using. And anyway, it's the middle of the night in California. Instead, I send the photo to her Gmail with the subject line, "We need to talk." Maybe she'll read her email when she borrows the aide's phone again. I check the time. It's barely 6:30. Nana won't be up for another half hour. I'm antsy and don't feel like going back inside, so I head for the woods behind the house instead. Now that pieces are falling into place about Katrin's involvement in Brooke's disappearance, I'm not scared about walking through the woods on my own. I follow the familiar path to Fright Farm, trying to empty my brain of thought and just enjoy the crisp fall air. I emerge from the woods across the street from Fright Farm and pause. I'd never noticed how different the gaping mouth of the entrance looks when the park is closed. Less kitschy and more forbidding. I suck in a breath and let it out, then cross the deserted street, my eyes on the still, silent Ferris wheel cutting into the pale blue sky. When I reach the entrance, I put my hand on the mottled paint of the wooden mouth, trying to imagine what Lacey was feeling when she snuck into the park after hours 5 years ago. Was she excited? Upset? Scared? And who was she with? Or who was she meeting? Without Daisy or Ryan on my list of suspects, it's back to who it's always been. Declan Kelly. Unless I'm missing someone.
Do you have a reason for being here?
The voice sends my heart into my throat. I whirl around to see an older man in a police uniform, one hand on the radio at his hip. It takes me a few seconds to recognize him. Officer McNulty, the one who's been interrogating Malcolm all week. Liz and Kyle's father. He and Kyle look alike, both tall and broad with light hair, square jaws, and eyes that are just a little too close together.
I was, taking a walk.
An unexpected rush of nerves makes my voice wobble. I don't know why I'm spooked suddenly by a middle-aged police officer. Maybe it's those flat, blue-gray eyes that remind me too much of his asshole sons. There's something cold and almost methodical about how thoroughly Kyle hates Malcolm. It was a stroke of good luck that we didn't run into him at homecoming the other night. Officer McNulty eyes me carefully.
We don't recommend kids walking alone in town just now.
He rubs his chin and squints.
Does your grandmother know you're here?
Yeah, I lie, wiping my damp palms on my pants. His radio crackles with static, and I think of how Ryan rushed out of his house this morning. I flop a hand toward the radio.
Is, something going on? With Brooke, or...
I trail off as Officer McNulty's face hardens.
Excuse me?
He asks tersely.
Sorry.
5 weeks of Ryan's superhuman patience made me forget that most cops don't like getting pestered with questions from teenagers. I'm just worried.
Worry at home,
he says, in the most conversation-closed voice I've ever heard. I take the hint and mumble a goodbye, hightailing it across the street and back into the woods. I've never appreciated Ryan more, or at all, I guess, if I'm being truthful. And I feel sorry for Malcolm having to answer Officer McNulty's questions day after day. The damp of the early morning dew is seeping through my sneakers as the leaves on the ground get thicker. The discomfort increases my annoyance with Officer McNulty. No wonder his kids are sour enough to hold a 5-year-long grudge about a bad breakup. I realize I don't know the whole story, and maybe Declan was a jerk to Liz. But she should leave Malcolm out of it, and Kyle should just mind his own business entirely. He's obviously not the kind of guy who knows how to let things go. He'd probably even hate Lacey if she were still around, for being the girl Declan chose over his sister. And Brooke for breaking up with him, and... I slow down as it hits me, and blood rushes to my head so quickly that I grab a nearby branch for support. It never occurred to me until right now that the only person in Echo Ridge with a grudge against every single person involved in Lacey's death and Brooke's disappearance is Kyle McNulty. But that doesn't make sense. Kyle was only 12 when Lacey died, and he has an alibi for the night Brooke disappeared. He was out of town with Liz, the sister Declan had dumped for Lacey. My heart squeezes in my chest as I start connecting dots. I've always thought that Lacey died because of someone's jealous passion. I just never considered that person might be Liz McNulty. Declan broke up with Liz, and Lacey died. 5 years later, Brooke breaks up with Kyle, who's friends with Katrin, and... God. What if they teamed up to take care of a mutual problem? I barely register that I'm in Nana's backyard as I yank my phone out of my pocket with shaking hands. Ryan gave me his phone number yesterday after the photo fiasco in his house. I need to call him right now. Then movement catches my eye, and I see Nana racing toward me in her plaid bathrobe and slippers, her gray hair wild. "Hi, Nana," I start, but she doesn't let me finish. "What in God's name are you doing out here?" she shouts, her face stricken. "Your bed wasn't slept in last night. Your brother had no idea where you were. I thought you had disappeared." Her voice cracks on the last word, sending a stab of guilt through me. I hadn't even considered that she might wake up and find me gone, and what that would be like for her. She's still barreling my way, and then suddenly she's hugging me. For the first time ever. Very tightly, and somewhat painfully. "I'm sorry," I manage. It's a little hard to breathe. "What were you thinking? How could you? I was about to call the police." "Nana, I can't. You're kind of crushing me." She drops her arms, and I almost stumble. "Don't you ever do that again. I was worried sick. Especially," she swallows visibly, "especially now." The back of my neck prickles. "Why now?"
"Come inside, and I'll tell you."
She turns and waits for me to follow, but I'm rooted to the spot. For the first time since I've been outside all morning, I realize my hands are numb with cold. I pull the sleeves of my sweater over them and wrap my arms around my body. "Just tell me now, please." Nana's eyes are red around the rims. "There's a rumor going around that the police found a body in the woods near the Canadian border. And that it's Brooks."
Chapter 31. Malcolm. Monday, October 7th. Somehow, we're supposed to still go to school. "There's nothing you can do," Mom keeps repeating on Monday morning. She puts an overfull bowl of Cheerios in front of me on the kitchen island, even though I never eat cereal. "Nothing is confirmed about Brooke. We have to think positive and act normally." The message might go over better if she didn't pour coffee into my Cheerios while she's saying it.
She doesn't notice, and when she turns, I grab milk off the island and top off the bowl. It's not the worst thing I've ever beaten. Plus, I got back from Officer Rodriguez's an hour ago and didn't bother trying to sleep. I could use the caffeine. I'm not going, Katrin says flatly. Mom eyes her nervously. Peter's gone, already left for work, and she's never been good at standing up to Katrin. Your father would understand, Katrin says in the same monotone. She's in the hoodie and athletic pants she wore last night, her hair pulled back into a low, messy ponytail. There's a plate of strawberries in front of her, and she keeps cutting one into smaller and smaller pieces without putting any of it into her mouth. Anyway, I'm sick. I threw up this morning. Oh, well, if you're sick. My mother looks relieved at the excuse and turns toward me with more confidence. You, on the other hand, need to go. Fine by me. I'm good with being anywhere Katrin's not. If she hadn't played sick, I would have. There's no way I can sit in a car with her this morning, especially not her car. More and more, it's sinking in that if Katrin did half the things we think she might have, chances are good she ran down Mr. Bowman and left him to die in the street. And that's just for starters. I grip my cereal spoon more tightly as I watch her methodically start cutting up a second strawberry, and it's all I can do not to reach out and smash everything on her plate into a pulp. All this waiting is a nightmare, especially when you know you're going to hate whatever answer comes. Mom smooths a hand over her bathrobe. I'm going to take a shower, unless either of you need anything. Can I take your car? I ask. She smiles distractedly on her way to the stairs. Yes, of course. And then she's gone, leaving Katrin and me alone in the kitchen. There's no sound except the clink of my spoon against the bowl and the loud ticking of the wall clock. I can't handle it for even 5 minutes. I'm leaving early, I say, getting up and dumping my half-finished coffee cereal in the garbage disposal. When I turn, Katrin is staring straight at me, and I'm struck silent by the cold blankness in her eyes. Why don't you just walk to school? She asks. You like walking, don't you? Fuck. She knows I followed her last night. I got too close on the way home. Who doesn't? I say tersely. I reach for Mom's keys on the kitchen island, but before I can pick them up, Katrin lays a hand over them. She regards me with the same cool stare. You're not as smart as you think you are. And you're not sick. To your stomach, anyway. I pull the keys from beneath her hand and grab my backpack off the floor. I don't want her to see how rattled I am, so I look away, even though I'd like one last chance to read her expression. What do you know? What did you do? I drive to school in a haze, almost missing the entrance. It's so early that I have my pick of spots in the parking lot. I cut the engine but keep the radio on, searching for a news station. NPR is talking politics, and all the local shows are breaking down the Patriots come from behind win yesterday, so I pull out my phone and search the Burlington Free Press site. There's a blurb at the bottom of the metro section. Police investigate human remains found on an abandoned property in Upper Huntsburg. Human remains. My stomach turns, and for a second, I'm positive I'll puke up every single coffee-soaked Cheerio that I was stupid enough to eat this morning. But it passes, and I recline my seat and close my eyes. I just want to rest for a few minutes, but the lack of sleep catches up with me and I'm dozing when a loud rap on my window startles me awake. I look groggily at the car clock. It's 2 minutes past the final bell, then out the window. Kyle and Theo are standing there, and they don't look like they're about to give me a friendly warning about being late. Viv is a few yards behind them, her arms crossed, a look of smug anticipation on her face, like a kid at a birthday party who's about to get that pony she's always wanted. I could drive away, I guess, but I don't want to give them the satisfaction of chasing me off. So I get out of the car. "You're gonna be late," is all I get out before Kyle drives his fist into my stomach. I fold in half and my vision goes white from the pain. He follows up with another punch to my jaw that sends me reeling against the car. My mouth fills with the coppery taste of blood as Kyle leans forward, his face inches from mine. "You're going down for this, Kelly," he spits and pulls back for another punch. Somehow I manage to duck and land a blow to Kyle's face before Theo steps in and pins my arms behind my back. I stomp on Theo's foot, but I'm off balance, and he only lets out a slight grunt before tightening his grip. Sharp pain shoots through my ribs, and the entire left side of my face feels like it's on fire. Kyle wipes a trickle of blood from his mouth with a grim smile. "I should have done this years ago," he says, and hauls his fist back for a punch that'll break my face. It doesn't come, though. A bigger fist closes over his and yanks him backward. For a few seconds, I don't know what the hell is going on, until Declan steps forward and looms over Theo. "Let him go," he says in a low, threatening tone. When Theo doesn't, Declan wrenches one of his arms so hard that Theo squeals in pain and backs off, hands up. Once I'm released, I see Kyle sprawled on the ground a few feet away, motionless. "Is he gonna get up?" I ask, rubbing my aching jaw. "Eventually," Declan says. Theo doesn't even check on Kyle, just sprints past him on his way to the back entrance. Viv is nowhere in sight. "Fucking cowards going 2-on-1. Declan reaches for the Volvo's door and pulls it open. "Come on, let's get out of here. No point in you going to school today. I'll drive." I slump in the passenger seat, nauseated and dizzy. I haven't been punched since 9th grade, and it wasn't anywhere near that hard. "Why are you here?" I ask. Declan turns the keys I left in the ignition. "I was waiting for you."
"Why?"
His jaw sets in a hard line. "I remember the first day of school after news like this." I suck in a breath and wince. I wonder if my ribs are cracked.
"What, you knew something like this was going to happen?"
"It happened to me," he says.
"I didn't know that."
I didn't know much back then, I guess. Too busy trying to pretend none of it was going on. We drive in silence for a minute until we near a corner store, and Declan suddenly swerves into the parking lot. "Hang on a sec," he says, before shifting into park and disappearing inside. When he comes out a couple of minutes later, he's holding something square and white in one hand. He tosses it to me as he opens the door. "Put those on your face." Frozen peas. I do as he says, almost groaning in relief as the cool seeps into my burning skin.
"Thanks for these and, you know, saving my ass."
Out of the corner of my eye, I see him shake his head. "Can't believe you got out of the car. Amateur." I'd laugh, but it hurts too much. I sit still with the peas on my face as we leave Echo Ridge for Salisbury, tracing the path I took to his apartment last week. Declan must be thinking the same thing, because he says, "You're a little bitch for following Daisy." He looks like he's seriously considering turning the car around and leaving me in the parking lot with Kyle.
I tried asking you what you were doing in town, I remind him. Didn't work. He doesn't answer, just sort of grunts, which I decide means point taken. When did you move here?
Last month, he says. Daisy needs to be around her parents, and me, so here I am.
You could have told me about her, you know.
Declan snorts.
Really, little brother?
He turns into Pinecrest Estates and pulls into the parking spot in front of number 9. You couldn't wait to get me out of Echo Ridge. The last thing you'd want to hear is that I'd moved one town over. No, wait, that's the second last. The last thing is me being with Lacey's best friend. I mean, hell, what would the Nilsons say, right?
I hate the Nilsons.
It slips out without thinking. Declan raises his brows as he opens his door.
Trouble in paradise?
I hesitate, trying to figure out how to explain, when my stomach seizes. I barely make it out of the car before I bend in half and vomit my breakfast all over the asphalt. Thank God it's quick because the movement makes my ribs feel like someone just ripped them out. My eyes water as I clutch the side of the car for support, gasping.
Delayed reaction, Declan says, reaching into the car for the discarded peas. Happens sometimes.
He lets me limp to the apartment on my own, unlocks the door, and points me toward the couch.
Lie down. I'll find an ice pack for your hand.
Declan's apartment is the most cliche bachelor pad ever. There's nothing in it except a couch and 2 armchairs, a giant television, and a bunch of milk crates for shelves. The couch is comfortable, though, and I sink into it while Declan roots around in his freezer. Something plastic digs into my back, and I pull out a remote. I aim it at the television and press the power button. A golf green with the ESPN logo in one corner fills the screen, and I click away, scrolling mindlessly through channels until the word Huntsburg catches my eye. I stop surfing as a man in a police uniform standing in front of a lectern says,
"Have been able to make a positive identification."
Declan! My throat hurts and my voice cracks, but when he doesn't answer, I rasp louder, "Declan!" His head emerges from the kitchen.
"What?"
"I can't find the..." He stops at the sight of my face and comes into the living room just as the officer on screen takes a deep breath.
"The body is that of a young woman who's been missing from Echo Ridge since last Saturday. 17-year-old Brooke Bennett. The Huntsburg Police Department would like to extend our condolences to Miss Bennett's family and friends and our support to her hometown police department. At this time, the investigation into cause of death is ongoing, and no further details will be released."
Chapter 32. Ellery. Monday, October 7th. I know the script. I've read it in countless books, and seen it play out dozens of times on television. All week, in the back of my mind, I knew how it would probably end. What I didn't understand was how mind-numbingly awful it would feel. At least I'm not alone. Ezra and Malcolm are in the living room with me Monday afternoon, 6 hours after the Huntsburg police found Brooke. None of us went to school today, although Malcolm's day was more eventful than ours. He showed up an hour ago, bruised and battered, and Nana has been handing him fresh ice packs every 15 minutes. We're arranged stiffly on her uncomfortable furniture, watching Channel 5 news coverage scroll across the screen. Melly Denglossa is standing on Echo Ridge Common, her dark hair whipping across her face as the leafy branches behind her sway in the wind. She's been talking nonstop since we turned the TV on, but only a few phrases sink in. Dead for more than a week. Foul play suspected but not confirmed. Yet another taunting message found this morning near Echo Ridge High School.
Great timing, Katrin, Ezra mutters. Malcolm's sitting next to me on the couch. One side of his jaw is bruised and swollen. The knuckles on his right hand are scraped raw, and he winces every time he moves. Someone needs to pay this time, he says in a low, angry voice. I reach for his uninjured hand. His skin is warm, and his fingers wrap around mine without hesitation. For a couple of seconds, I feel better, until I remember that Brooke is dead, and everything is horrible. Every time I close my eyes, I see her, working the shooting range at Fright Farm, trying to stand up to Vance, wandering the halls at Echo Ridge High, looking sad and worried, swaying and rambling her way out of the Fright Farm office on the night she disappeared. I should have pushed her harder to tell us what was wrong. I had a chance to change the course of that night, and I blew it. When my phone rings with the familiar California number, I almost don't answer it. Then I figure, what the hell? The day can't possibly get any worse. Hi, Sadie, I say tonelessly. Oh, Ellery. I saw the news. I'm so, so sorry about your friend. And I saw... She pauses, her voice wavering. I saw your email. I wasn't sure what I was looking at until I zoomed in on the uniform and saw his name. Did you think it was Ezra at first? Because I sure did. I'm surprised to find that beneath the heavy misery of Brooke's death, I can still manage to spare an undercurrent of anger for my mother. How could you not tell us? How could you let us live a lie for 17 years and think our father was Jose the frickin' stuntman? I don't bother keeping my voice down. It's not like anyone in the room doesn't know what's going on. It wasn't a total lie, Sadie says. I wasn't sure, Ellery. The stuntman happened, and, well, Gabriel Rodriguez also happened a little while afterward. Her voice drops. Sleeping with a married man was a huge mistake. I never should have gone there. Yeah, well, he shouldn't have either. I don't have any empathy to spare for the man in the photograph. He doesn't feel like my father. He doesn't feel like anything. Besides, keeping the marital vows was his job. But why did you? I wasn't thinking straight. My father was gone, memories of Sarah were everywhere, and I made a bad choice. Then the timing of the pregnancy fit better with the, other situation, and I wanted that to be true, and so I convinced myself that it was. How? I look at Ezra, who's staring at the floor with no indication that he's hearing any of this. How did you convince yourself of that when... What was his name again? Gabriel? Looked exactly like Ezra. I didn't remember what he looked like, Sadie says, and I snort out a disbelieving laugh. I'm not kidding. I told you before I drank my way through the entire funeral. Okay. But you remembered enough that you knew he was a possibility, right? That's why you were so shifty the first time I mentioned Officer Rodriguez. Well, yes. It rattled me, she admits. So you lied to cover it up. You made up a story about Officer Rodriguez at Lacey's funeral, and you made me suspicious of him. What? Sadie sounds bewildered. Why would that make you suspicious of him? Suspicious about what? That's not the point, I snap. The point is it did, and then I didn't ask him for help when I could have, and now Brooke is dead and maybe... I stop. All the anger suddenly drained out of me,
remembering how I hadn't told anyone what we'd found in the Fright Farm recycling bin for an entire weekend. Keeping secrets that weren't mine to hold. Like mother, like daughter. Maybe I made everything worse.
Made what worse?
Ellery, I'm sure you didn't do anything wrong. You can't blame yourself for...
Ellery?
Nana sticks her head into the living room. Officer Rodriguez is here. He says you called him? Her eyes fasten on the phone at my ear.
Who are you talking to?
Just someone from school, I answer Nana, then turn back to the phone. I have to go, I tell Sadie, but before I can disconnect, Ezra extends his hand.
Let me talk, he says,
and his voice holds the same dull fury that mine did. It takes a lot to make the two of us mad, especially at Sadie, but she managed. I hand Ezra the phone and tug Malcolm to his feet. We head for the hallway as Nana returns to the kitchen. Ryan is standing in front of the front door, his face sad and haggard. I don't know how I ever thought he looked young for his age.
Hey, guys, he says. I was just heading home when I got your message. What's so urgent?
He catches sight of Malcolm's swollen jaw and his eyes widen.
What happened to you?
Kyle McNulty, Malcolm says shortly.
You want to press charges?
Ryan asks. Malcolm grimaces. No. Maybe you can convince him to change his mind, I say. In the meantime, I have this kind of theory about Kyle. That's why I called you. I lick my lips, trying to get my thoughts in order. I ran into Officer McNulty this morning and... Ryan frowns.
Where did you run into Officer McNulty?
I wave my hand dismissively. That part's not important. I don't want to get sidetracked with a lecture about not going home when Ryan told me to. But it got me thinking about Kyle and how connected he is to everything that's been happening around here. Declan broke up with his sister, Liz, and that was a whole big thing while you guys were in school, right? Ryan nods warily, like he has no idea where I'm headed and isn't sure he wants to find out. Malcolm looks the same. I haven't shared any of this with him yet. I wasn't sure I'd have the energy to do it more than once. Then Lacey dies and Declan's basically run out of town, I continue. And now, 5 years later, Brooke breaks up with Kyle, and Brooke disappears, and Kyle and Katren are friends, and we already know Katren is involved in the homecoming threats, so... I steal a glance at Ryan to see how he's taking all this. He doesn't look as impressed as I had hoped. Basically, I think they're all in it together. Liz, Kyle, and Katren.
That's your new theory? Ryan asks.
I don't appreciate the somewhat sardonic emphasis he puts on the word new. Malcolm just sags against the wall, like he's too exhausted to get into any of this right now. Yes, I say. Ryan folds his arms.
It doesn't concern you that Liz and Kyle have alibis?
They're each other's alibi, I say. It only makes me more sure I'm onto something.
So you think... What? We just took their word for it?
Well, no. A trickle of doubt seeps in. Did somebody else see them? Ryan rakes a hand through his hair.
I shouldn't tell you this. It's not your business. But maybe it'll get you to stop trying to do my job and trust me. For once.
He lowers his voice. An entire fraternity saw them. There are pictures and video, time-stamped and posted on social media. Oh, I say in a small voice, embarrassment warming my cheeks. He makes a frustrated noise in his throat.
Will you knock it off now? Please? I appreciate you coming to me this morning, but like I told you, at this point, you're more likely to hurt the investigation
then help, if you keep talking about it. In fact, he shoves his hands into his pockets and slides his eyes toward Malcolm. I was just telling your mother, Malcolm, that it might not be a bad idea to stay with friends for a day or two. Malcolm goes stiff. Why? Is something happening with Katrin? Was it the video, or... I'm not talking about anything specific, but tensions are running high and I... Ryan pauses, like he's searching for exactly the right words. I wouldn't want you to accidentally say something to her that could... interfere. Interfere how? Malcolm asks. It's just a suggestion. Tell your mother to consider it, all right? Should I be worried about Katrin? Malcolm asks. Doing something, I mean? Ryan doesn't answer, and Malcolm glowers. It's bullshit that she's just walking around like nothing happened. You have proof she's shady, and you're not doing anything with it. You have no idea what we're doing. Ryan's face doesn't change, but his tone gets steely. I'm asking you to lie low. That's it. All right? We nod, and he clears his throat. How is, everything else, Celery? With your mom and... you know. Horrible, I say. But who really cares, right? He heaves a sigh that sounds as bone-deep exhausted as I feel. Right.
Chapter 33. Malcolm. Thursday, October 10th. Turns out I didn't need to leave the house. Katrin did. Her aunt swooped in 2 days after Brooke's body was found. She wanted to take Katrin to New York, but the Echo Ridge police asked her not to leave the state while the investigation is pending. So they're at some 5-star hotel in Top Notch instead, which pisses me off every time I think about it. Of all the possible scenarios I thought might happen once I turned over that video of Katrin, her taking a spa vacation wasn't one of them. So much for keeping the key witnesses nearby, Declan snorts when I tell him. We were all told we had to stay in Echo Ridge after Lacey died. Money talks, I guess. I'm at his apartment having dinner with him and Daisy. It's weird for a few reasons. One, I've never seen my brother cook before. Two, he's surprisingly good at it. And three, I can't get used to seeing him with Daisy. My brain keeps wanting to replace her with Lacey, and it's kind of unnerving. He doesn't know about the car repair receipt or the video I took of Katrin. I'm keeping my promise to Officer Rodriguez to stay quiet. It's not hard with Declan. We might be getting along better than usual, but he still talks a lot more than he listens. Peter didn't want her to go, I say, shifting in my chair and wincing at the pain in my ribs. Turns out they're only bruised, not cracked, but they still hurt like hell. Katrin's aunt insisted. Getting away isn't a bad idea, though, Daisy says. She and Declan are washing dishes while I sit at the kitchen table, and she keeps brushing against him even though there's plenty of room for two in front of the double sink. It's so horrible those first few days after. All you can think about is what you could have done differently. At least a new environment is a distraction. She sighs and flips the towel she's holding over her shoulder, leaning into Declan. I feel for Katrin, honestly. This brings back such awful memories of Lacey. Declan kisses the top of her head, and the next thing I know, they're whispering, nuzzling, and about 10 seconds away from a full-on makeout session. It's uncomfortable, not to mention crap timing after what we've just been talking about. I realize they've been suppressing their big forbidden love for years, but I could have used another half hour. Minimum. When the doorbell rings, I'm relieved at the interruption. I'll get it, I volunteer, springing up as fast as my bruised ribs will let me.
too fast, as it turns out. Even though Declan's front door is only steps away from the kitchen, I'm still wincing when I open it. Officer Ryan Rodriguez is standing on Declan's stoop, wearing his full police uniform. He blinks in surprise when he sees me.
Oh, hey, Malcolm. I wasn't expecting to see you here.
Same, I say. Are you... I try to think of a reason why he might be here and can't come up with one.
What's up? Is your brother around?
Yeah, come on in, I say, and he steps through the door. Declan and Daisy have managed to separate by the time we enter the kitchen.
Hey, Declan, Officer Rodriguez says, folding his arms in front of him like a shield.
I know that stance. It's the one I get around Kyle McNulty. I don't remember much about Ryan from when he was in high school, since he and Declan didn't hang out, but I do know this. If you weren't part of Declan's crew, chances are he would have treated you like shit at some point. Not slamming you into lockers necessarily, but acting like your existence annoyed him, or pretending you didn't exist at all. And Daisy, Officer Rodriguez adds. Crap. I swallow nervously and look at Declan. I forgot nobody's supposed to know those two are together. My brother doesn't acknowledge me, but I can see the muscles in his jaw tighten as he steps slightly in front of Daisy. At least they aren't shoving their tongues down one another's throats anymore.
Ryan, hi,
Daisy says, with the kind of forced cheerfulness I've noticed she uses whenever she's stressed, unlike Mia, who just glares extra hard.
Nice to see you again.
Declan, on the other hand, cuts to the chase. What are you doing here? Officer Rodriguez clears his throat.
I have a few questions for you.
Everybody goes still. We've heard that before.
Sure,
Declan says a little too casually. We're all still standing in his cramped little kitchen, and he gestures to the table.
Have a seat.
Officer Rodriguez hesitates, his eyes flicking toward me.
I could, or... Do you want to step outside for a minute? Not sure if you want Daisy and your brother here, or...
He rocks back and forth on his heels, and suddenly I can see all the nervous bumbling Ellery was talking about. It's like the guy is regressing by the minute in Declan's and Daisy's presence.
No, Declan says shortly. This is fine.
Officer Rodriguez shrugs and lowers himself into the nearest chair, folding his hands on the table while he waits for Declan to sit across from him. Daisy drops beside Declan, and since I can't think of anything else to do and nobody's asked me to leave, I take the last chair. Once we're all seated, Officer Rodriguez focuses his gaze on Declan and says,
Could you tell me your whereabouts the Saturday before last? September 28th?
I feel almost exactly like I did the morning that Brooke disappeared, when I realized I'd have to tell Officer McNulty that I was the last person to see her. This can't be happening. Shit, shit, shit. Declan doesn't answer right away, and Officer Rodriguez clarifies,
The night Brooke Bennett disappeared.
Panic starts worming its way into my chest as Declan's voice rises.
Are you fucking kidding me?
He asks. Daisy puts a hand on his arm. Officer Rodriguez's voice is mild but firm.
No, I am not kidding you.
You want to know where I was the night a girl disappeared? Why?
Are you refusing to answer the question?
Should I?
He was with me, Daisy says quickly. I study her, trying to get a read on whether she's telling the truth. Her pretty face is suddenly all hard lines and angles, so maybe she's lying, or maybe she's just scared. Some emotion flits across Officer Rodriguez's face, but it's gone before I can figure out what it is.
Okay. And may I ask where you two were?
No,
Declan says. At the same time, Daisy replies, Here. I still can't tell if she's lying. It goes on like that for a few minutes. Daisy smiles like her teeth hurt the whole time. A dull red flush creeps up Declan's neck, but Officer Rodriguez seems to be getting progressively at ease.
All right, he says finally. If I could switch gears for a minute. Have you ever been to Huntsburg?
Daisy's eyes widen as Declan goes rigid. Huntsburg, he repeats. This time, he doesn't state the obvious. You're asking me if I've ever been to the town where Brooke's body was discovered.
Right, Officer Rodriguez says. No,
Declan growls.
Never?
Never.
Okay, one last thing.
Officer Rodriguez digs into his pocket and pulls out something in a sealed plastic bag that glints under the cheap track lighting in Declan's kitchen.
This was found in Huntsburg, in the same general area as Brooke's body. Does it look familiar to you?
My blood turns to ice. It does to me. The ring is big and gold, with the words Echo Ridge High etched around a square purple stone. The number 13 is on one side, and the initials DK on another. Declan's class ring, although he never wore it. He gave it to Lacey junior year, and she kept it on a chain around her neck. I haven't seen it in years, not since before she died. It never occurred to me until just now to wonder where it went. Daisy pales. Declan pushes back from the table, his face expressionless.
I think we're done talking, he says.
It's not enough to make an arrest, I guess, because Officer Rodriguez leaves after Declan stops answering his questions. Then Declan, Daisy, and I sit silently in the kitchen for the longest minute of my life. My thoughts blur together, and I can't look at either of them. When Declan finally speaks up, his voice is stilted. I haven't seen that ring since before Lacey died. We argued about it. We'd been fighting all week. All I wanted to do was break things off, but I didn't have the guts to come right out and say it. So I asked her for my ring back. She wouldn't give it to me. That was the last time I ever saw it. Or her. His hands are clenched into tight fists. I have no clue how it ended up in Huntsburg.
Daisy's chair is angled toward him. Her hand is on his arm again.
I know, she murmurs. Damn it all to hell, I still can't tell if she's lying. I can't tell if anyone's lying. Declan hasn't ever told that story before. Maybe he didn't remember the ring till just now either. Maybe he didn't want to remind anyone of how much he and Lacey had been fighting before she died. Or maybe it didn't happen. It's been creeping up on me for weeks now how little I know my brother. When I was really young, he was like a superhero to me. Later, he was more like a bully. After Lacey died, he turned into a ghost. He's helped me out since Brooke's body was discovered, but until then, all he'd done was lie and sneak around. And now I can't shut off that corner of my brain that keeps asking, what if?
Fuck you, Mal.
Declan's voice makes me jump. His neck is still brick red, his expression thunderous.
You think I can't tell what's running through your head right now? It's written all over your face. You think I did it, don't you? You always have.
I open my mouth to protest, but no words come. His face darkens even further.
Get the hell out of here. Just leave.
So I do. Because the answer isn't yes, but it's not no either.
Chapter 34. Ellery. Thursday, October 10th. But none of it makes any sense. I'm at Malcolm's house, curled up on his couch like on homecoming night. He has the Defender movie on again, but neither of us are watching it. He texted me half an hour ago. I need your true crime brain. I'm not sure why he trusts me after my Kyle Liz theory imploded so spectacularly. But here I am. I don't think I'm helping, though. Declan being Lacey's killer has always made sense to me. But being Brooks? Never even crossed my mind. What connection is there between Declan and Brooke? I ask. Malcolm's eyes flash. None that I know of. Except that he was in town the night she disappeared. If the police had ever looked at my phone, they'd have seen his text. He takes out his phone and unlocks it, then swipes for a minute. He holds the phone out to me, and I'm looking at a message. In town for a few hours. Don't freak out. I read it twice, and when I look back up at Malcolm, his face is the picture of misery. I thought that I was trying to help Declan out by not, you know, telling the police, he says haltingly. I thought it was just bad timing. But what if... Christ, Ellery. He slumps back against the couch, rubbing a hand so hard across his bruised face that it has to hurt. What if it was more than that? I study Declan's text again, wondering why I don't find it more disturbing. After all, I've had him at the top of my suspect list for weeks, and this puts him at the scene of the crime. Problem is, it's not the right crime. Okay, but Declan was in the process of moving then, right? Or he had moved? So he had a perfectly good reason for being here, I say, handing the phone back to Malcolm. And why would he send you that text if he was planning something? You'd think he'd be more subtle. Subtle isn't how Declan rolls. I get what you're saying, though. Malcolm brightens a little, then jiggles his phone as though he's weighing it. I should let my mother know what's up. But she's having dinner with a friend, and she's hardly done that kind of thing since she and Peter got married. I feel like I should let her have a few hours of peace before everything goes to hell again. I think back to my one lunch at Echo Ridge High with Brooke, when she'd said that Malcolm was cute but couldn't compare to Declan. Do you think... Could Declan and Brooke have been secretly dating or something? What, while he was also secretly dating Daisy? I'm just trying to figure out how the ring could have gotten there. Would he have given it to Brooke? Malcolm's voice is ragged. Maybe. I mean, you'd think somebody would have noticed him sneaking around with a high school girl, but maybe not. He runs a hand through his hair. I shouldn't have left Declan's place. Me and him. I don't know. It's always been complicated. We're not close. Sometimes I've almost hated him. But he's not a... serial killer. He almost chokes on the words. Do you think Daisy knows more than she's saying? Do you? Malcolm asks. I had had Daisy in mind as a potential accomplice right up to the day she clocked Mia in the head with a candlestick, then spilled her guts after. She had seemed so sincere and heartbroken that I couldn't picture it anymore. No, I say slowly. I mean, why would she go through the trouble of looking for Lacey's bracelet if she were? The case was ice cold at that point. If she were involved, the last thing she'd want to do is get the police thinking about it again. And Declan helped her, didn't he? Although, well, I guess he's not the one who gave the bracelet to Lacey, right? Daisy said as much. So maybe he figured it didn't matter. Malcolm rubs his temple and sighs, deep and weary. I want to believe him.